We're doing a special class on Tractate Gittin, the stories of the destruction of the temple. The Talmud primarily focuses on the stories of the destruction of the second temple. We know both temples were destroyed on the 9th of Av. And now we're in the 3 weeks. We will have only next week to prepare for Tisha B'Av, because the following week, Sunday night, is already Tisha B'Av, if I'm not mistaken. So we're going to begin with Gittin Nun Hei Amud Beis, the Mishnah. Gittin literally means contracts. The standard contract that we describe as a get is a divorce contract, but really, a get means a contract. And so in Tractate Gittin, we have discussions of different types of contracts. The Mishnah says, Lo haya sikrikon biyuda baharugei malchut meharugei hamilchama ve'eilach yesh basikrikon. Initially, there was not a concept of sikrikon in Judea. What is sikrikon? Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi, the first Rashi on the Mishnah, says sikrikon is oved kochavim rotzeach. It's a murderer. Shenoten lo Yisrael kalka befidyon nafsho. That the Jew tells him, I'll give you my land, don't kill me. Ve'omer lo sa kalka zo ve'al temiche teini. He tells him, take this land, don't kill me. So initially, in the land of Judea, they did not have that. Sikrikon. In other areas in Israel, you had this issue of Sikrikon, but not in Judea. Baharugei HaMilchama, Rashi says, Milchemet Titus Shaitan Birushalayim Uviyuda. Now that word, Baharugei Milchama, needs definition. Doesn't exactly fit into the sentence. Initially it says, there was no Sikrikon in Judea, comma. Baharugei Milchama, among those who were killed at war, comma. That doesn't exactly fit the sentence. Next sentence, Me'arugei HaMilchama Ve'ilach, but from the period of Titus's wars on Jerusalem and onward, so then, Yesh Basikrikon, then in Judea you did have these people, these bandits who would come in and threaten someone with death, and that's how they were able to take over land. Yes?
Is there a single word that you could translate Sikrikon?
I do not know. Sikrikon is this type of bandit. Threatens people with their lives and they give them up land. Now, the truth is, Ketzad, how does this really affect our halacha? Lakach mesikrikon. Let's say someone bought the land from the Sikrikon. V'chazav lakach mibal habayit. And then he went and bought a second time from the original owner. Let's make believe that Josh Cohen owns a piece of land in Jerusalem. And then this Sikrikon, Ivan the Terrible, walks in, draws his saber, and says, your life or your life. So Josh Cohen says, take my land, don't kill me. So Ivan the Terrible says, you have 3 minutes to pack out with your family, and then I won't kill you. He grabs his wife and kids and runs. Then Ivan the Terrible puts up a for sale sign on that property. And along comes Chaim the Levite and pays Ivan the Terrible, takes the property. Chaim the Levite then calls up Josh the Cohen and says, I want to pay you for the property again. Because he wants to make sure that he has a good contract. He knows that if Josh the Cohen sues Chaim the Levite in court, then technically Chaim didn't buy it from the rightful owner. He bought it from Ivan the Terrible, right? So Chaim comes and pays Josh the Cohen. He says, I want to pay you for your land. I know I have your property. I know I bought it from Ivan. Okay, I want to pay you for it. Says the Mishnah, even if he bought it from the Sikrikon, and then he bought it from the original owner, Mekhobatel, the sale is null and void. Says the Rashi, Mekho batel is sales null and void. Damrinan miravit. We say that Josh didn't really want to sell his property. He's scared of Ivan. He tells him, no, I'm not selling. So Chaim will tell Ivan, give me back my money. And Ivan will go after Josh and say, hey, didn't we say it's my property? Why are you making problems? So Josh isn't about to start up with Ivan. So then even though Josh technically sold his property, we say he did it out of fear. Onward. Mibal HaBayit, but what would happen if Chaim the Levite would first approach Josh the Kohen and say, hey, I want to try and get that piece of property. Gentlemen, forgive me for a second. So we're continuing now. So this is where we start seeing a discussion of how things changed in Jerusalem. When Titus came in, you started having these armed thefts of property. And the Mishnah said that if he would have first approached the original Jewish owner and purchased the rights from him and only then gone on to the Sikrikon, to that armed bandit, we'll call him Ivan the Terrible, then the sale would be valid. And then the Talmud goes on to discuss how the halacha evolved with regard to the Sikrikon, how the courts dealt with this phenomenon. You started having a situation where property was taken by force from people and you needed to have some kind of system with which you could buy, sell, and maintain property. So that's what the Mishnah goes on to discuss. Now, the Gemara then goes on to discuss the first line of the Mishnah, which we didn't know how to decipher. What's this Harugei Malchut? It says, from the time the government started executing people. So what's going on there? And from there, the Gemara goes into a discussion of what happened that brought about the destruction. Being that our Mishnah focuses on the evolvement of property rights through the period and past the period of the destruction of the temple, and the idea that in Jerusalem you started having murderers who would take possession of properties. So from there, the discussion begins. Wait a second, how did we get there? How did the destruction come about? How did we get to a point where murderers were taking possession of our property? How did this happen? And that's where our story begins in the fourth wide line of the Gemara. Those of you who would like, there are tractates Gittin over there, on the shelf behind the bench. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Our discussion begins with a quote from Rabbi Yochanan, the great Rabbi Yochanan who compiled the Jerusalem Talmud, Rabbi Yochanan who was so beautiful, Rabbi Yochanan who had long eyelashes, who was practically blind, not to be confused with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai the Tana. This is Rabbi Yochanan the Amora. Okay, so there's a gap of about two centuries between them. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the disciple of Hillel. He was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, who were the Rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva. So you're talking about two and a half centuries between Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and the Rabbi Yochanan we're reading about now, who was after the conclusion of the Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, we're on the same page, Nun Hei Amid Beis, the fourth wide line. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, three words into the line. Mai Dichtiv. What does the verse teach us when it says, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid? The verse in Proverbs says, praised is he, praised is the man who is always worried. Umakshe libo, and he who hardens his heart, yipol bira'ah, falls onto bad things. Will fall into hardship, into bad times. So he who is concerned, has foresight, praised is he. He who is stubborn, he ultimately falls. What's that talking about, says Rabbi Yochanan? It's talking about the destruction of the temple. The destruction of the second temple. Akamtza uvar kamtza charuv Yerushalayim. Over a grasshopper and the son of a grasshopper, Jerusalem was destroyed. Kamtza literally means a grasshopper or an ant. Yeah? We're going to see in a second what it's talking about. Atarnegola v'tarnegolta charuv turuv malka. Over a rooster and a hen, the great city of Tur Malka, which was like the king's mountain, that was destroyed. Ashaka de rispak charuv beiter, over the spoke of a wheel, or the, what do you call that bar in between the two wheels? What's that called? Axle. Or the, over the axle of a wheel, so over that was destroyed the great city of Beiter or Beitar. Okay, so we're going to have three stories. Notice how Rabbi Yochanan begins with a verse. He goes on to show us things that seem very minuscule. A grasshopper and its son. Kamtza and bar kamtza. A rooster and a hen. The axle of a wheel. You want to know how destruction came about over little things. Little things can cause tremendous destruction if people are hard-hearted, if people are stubborn, if people are unrelenting, if people refuse to look at life with foresight. There's a responsibility that each of us has. A responsibility to understand the gravity of the situation. 2 or 3 years ago, terrorists threw a rock at a car in Hebron and murdered a child and I think also the father. What? What was the name?
Palmer?
I don't remember. So when it happened, the police lied. The police said he lost control. It had nothing to do with any terrorist activity. And two or three days later, it became clear that the police had lied to the public, and people got very upset. And little old me said that the police were 100% right. So people were upset at me. People said, "What do you mean? How could the police lie to us?" And I said, "Look, you can agree with the government or disagree with the government, but the government has a national responsibility. When you have people who decide that because they're upset, they can decide government policy, they can make moves that will define the future for all of us, then the government can't tell them the truth. Because if people are responsible, then people look at the global picture and people realize, I don't have the full picture." We can take a small example from something that happened last week. I'm not a political commentator. I don't know. I look at the map and I say there are many factors I don't know. Israel offered Hamas a ceasefire. I think the average sane person who read that headline had his blood curdling. Because you ask yourself, terrorists are trying to kill us and we're offering them a ceasefire? Aren't we crazy? What kind of ceasefire? We didn't start shooting. What are you offering them a ceasefire for? What are you offering them conditions for? In hindsight, maybe it was a brilliant move. Maybe Netanyahu worked together with the Egyptians who want the Hamas dead more than we do, because they know the Hamas is partners with the Muslim Brotherhood. And maybe there were clauses in that ceasefire where it was obvious to anyone in the know that Hamas would never accept. But like this, in the eyes of the international community, we did everything. We even offered them a ceasefire. So maybe Netanyahu dragged it out another 2 days to accomplish a certain international victory, which would give him a little bit more time to act now without having the wrath of the UN against us. And maybe now we find out that all this time that they said we weren't doing anything, we now find out that they had secret commando units inside Gaza for the last 15 days. All this time that they said they were doing nothing, they were plucking people like flies. They kept saying they were doing nothing, and really they had the Shayetet out there. And this I heard from people there, and they had a lot of units inside already. As they were saying, "We're not doing anything yet. Guys, yeah, let's offer them a ceasefire." Because the major troops, 45,000, were standing by the fence doing nothing. So now I'm supposed to go and gauge what the government's doing when I don't know the full scope of what the government's doing. So I'm not saying I should back the government or not back the government. I should vote for the government or not vote for the government. But before I take action that's going to be definitive for all of Klal Yisrael, I better understand real well what that action can do on to all of Klal Yisrael. Yes.
They knew right away there was a
Correct.
So what purpose can it have to say it had nothing to do with the roads?
They had at the time it happened, if I remember correctly, either Obama was here or it was the day before he came. They didn't want mass Jewish riots then. That was their call. You can say it's a bad call. You could say it's a good call. One thing I can say is that they have calculations that we know nothing about. None of us knew Stuxnet was in the workings, right? There's a lot of things they've been doing that we know nothing about. I'm not saying they're perfect, but I'm saying they have the responsibility to gauge things on behalf of all of us. And what we're going to see in these stories is that people who should have thought of the long-term effects did not, and a few hotheads who decided they're taking matters into their own hands actually brought down the people, or sometimes the whole city, or sometimes all of Jerusalem. And we're going to see that there's a certain responsibility every one of us has to have, and a certain foresight, and a recognition that we're limited. There are things we don't know, and therefore we can't deal. That's true. We can try to impose a better government. We can try to ensure that we have better elected officials. There are many things we can try to do. But if we try to take the future into our own hands in the sense of affecting the broader picture when we don't have the broader picture, we're not in that position, then we're really risking the future of the people, as we will see. And so the description of Rav Yochanan begins with minuscule things. Notice how little things will lead to big destruction. But Rav Yochanan begins with a line. He says, what does the verse mean when it says, praised is a person who is always concerned, and a person who is stubborn will fall in evil? So now he's going to explain. Akamtza uvalkamtza charuv Yerushalayim. Over a grasshopper and its son was Jerusalem destroyed. Right away Rashi sticks in. We look at Rashi to the left. Kamtza ubar kamtza. Kach Shem Shnei Yehudim. This was the name of two Jews. One Jew was called Grasshopper, the next Jew was called Son of a Grasshopper. Interesting names. Now,
what does a grasshopper represent?
That's a good question. One day we will merit to learn the Maharal on this Gemara, and then we will explore that, Bezrat Hashem.
Is it Maharal?
No. You will notice that Rashi also precludes another understanding in the Gemara. If we wouldn't have Rashi, we would have said this is a father and his son. This is Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. It's
any,
Mr. Grasshopper and his son.
Are there any Rishonim that read it that way?
I think the Marsha learns that way, if I'm not mistaken.
What do you mean?
Right, because Rashi says they're two Jews. That one, his name was Grasshopper. The other one's name was Son of Grasshopper. That's what Rashi says. That's their name, Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Now, when people don't know Aramaic, so they think Kamtza comes from the Hebrew word of Kamtzan, which means miserly, stingy. But really, Kamtza is Aramaic. It's not from the word Kamtzan. It would seem it's from the word Kamtza. If you look at the Targum, do we have a Chumash here with Targum? Chumash Bamidbar with Targum? No, Chumash Bamidbar here with Targum. Okay. What? Okay. You're getting one, Aaron? No, no. Okay. Say this. So later we'll get back to it. We're in the Gemara now.
Okay, so then, if you look it up in the Gemara dictionary, you'll find exactly what you're saying now.
Check.
All those there on the second shelf?
They have an English.
It's a really thick one.
Oh, what are you looking at?
Targum, I mean Hebrew, and Aramaic. Okay, let's move forward. Dehahu Gavra. We're holding five lines from the bottom. Five words into the line. Dehahu Gavra, there was that man. Derachme Kamtza. He liked Kamtza. Uval Devavei, and his enemy was Bar Kamtza. Avad Sudata. He made a festive meal. Amalei l'shamei, he said to his servant, Zil, go, Aiti li, bring to me, Kamtza, go summon my good friend Kamtza to the meal. Azal, the servant, he wasn't too swift, he went to the enemy, went knocking on the wrong door. He's looking for the address, Kamtza, Mr. Kamtza, oh, he sees Bar Kamtza, okay, must be that's it. So, Azalai Tilei Bar Kamsa, he went and invited Bar Kamsa. Ata, so then the host, he's visiting his guests in this big meal. Ashkechei Dehavi Yativ, he comes across Bar Kamsa sitting, enjoying from his meal. Amalei, so he turns to Bar Kamsa and says to him, Mechdi, let's think about this for a minute. You are my enemy, he says to him. My baitacha, what are you doing here eating my food? What are you doing here? Kumpuk, get up and get out. Amalei, so Bar Kamsa, he got an invitation, he came. Now suddenly his host is telling him, hey, I know you're my enemy, get up and get out. So Bar Kamsa says to him, Oil v'atai, being that I already came, Shavkan, let me stay, let it go. V'yahivna lach t'mei madachina, I'll pay you for what I ate. V'shatina, I'll pay you for what I drank. We're up on the top of page Nun Vav Amar Aleph. Amar Lei Lo. So the host, we never get to hear his name. He says, no. Amar Lei, yivna lach t'mei palga desudatich. He says, you know what? I'll pay you for half the feast. I'll cover half your cost here. Don't kick me out in front of everyone. Amalei lo. The host says, no. Amalei evnerach mekula sudatech. He says, I'll pay you for the whole meal. Amalei lo. The host says, no. Nakte biadei. He took him by his hands. Ve'ukme, he lifted him, ve'apke, and kicked him out. Amar, so now Bar Kamsa, he was just kicked out of the meal. Big festive meal. Ho'il ve'avuyat ve'rabanan ve'lo machube, Bar Kamsa said, the rabbis were all sitting there. Must have been a big meal. He had all the rabbis at this meal. And everyone was sitting there and they all saw how he was kicking me out of the meal. And no one stood up and said to him, hey, don't embarrass him, don't kick him out. Shma mina kanicha lehu. Must be the rabbis are okay with me being kicked out of a meal. Eze lecha bakutza bemalka. So I will go and rat on them. I'll tell a good juicy lie about the Jews to the king. So now this Bar Kamsa fellow, we're starting to understand that, look at what a character. So he has it in, he's very upset, he was hurt, his feelings was hurt, he was embarrassed. And now what's he going to do? He's going to go to the Roman Empire and say something bad about all of the Jewish people. And we're going to see that he's going to cause the Romans to actually bring their forces on Jerusalem. So, let's stop for a second. This evil character called Bar Kamsa. Maybe we can understand the host who tells him, hey buddy, get out. And maybe we could understand the rabbis who didn't exactly want to say anything on behalf of this guy. Because here we see he's prepared to do such evil things. We're going to have to revisit the beginning of the story after we finish the story. Let's see just how cruel he is. So he made his way all the way to the Caesar. What a trip. He goes out to Rome. He tells the Caesar, Maldubach Yehudai, the Jews have rebelled against you. Amale miyemal. So the Roman emperor says, who says? Amale shadalu kubina. So Bar Kamsa says, send a sacrifice along. Non-Jews are allowed to bring a sacrifice in the temple. Try sending a sacrifice to the temple. Chaziti mikrevin lei. See if the Jews offer your sacrifice. Azal shadabede iglatilta. So the Roman emperor took a chosen calf. He took a very fine calf, what's called igla tilta, a third calf, which means the cow, as it ages, produces better and better cows until it starts aging and producing less good cows. So the first calf it produces is weaker. Its second calf is weaker. The third is prime. The fourth is already weaker again. The third is considered the prime. So he took the chosen prime calf he had and sent it as an offering.
What's Azel?
He went. Azal, the Roman emperor, went. Shadal Biaday, he sent in Barkamtsa's hand Iglatilta, a third calf, meaning a chosen calf. Behade de Kaate, as Barkamtsa was approaching the temple, Shada Beimuma Beniv Svatayim, he made a slit in the lip of the calf. The Amrila and others have a tradition that the wound he inflicted on the calf was Bidukin Sheba'ayin, in the eyebrow. Duchta de Ledidan Avemuma, an area where in our tradition that disqualifies the animal from a sacrifice. And the Romans didn't consider that a blemish, so they thought they were still offering a perfect calf. So he inflicts a slight blemish that the Romans will overlook because in their book it's okay, and by our tradition it's not okay. So he's really sly. And now the rabbis are going to have to decide, do we accept the Roman calf as an offering or not? Savu Rabbanan likuva mishum shlom malchut. So the rabbi said, look what's going on here. There's a game going on here. The Roman emperor sent the calf. We have to offer it because otherwise the Romans are going to be, there's going to be discord between us. We have to offer that calf. Mishum shlom malchut, in the name of peace in the kingdom. Amalu Rabbi Zchaya ben Avkulas, Rabbi Zchaya ben Avkulas said, if we offer that calf, yomru, people will say, balei mumin krevini gobe amizbeach. People will say, you can offer blemished animals. Savu lemiktele. So the rabbi said, okay, then we have to kill Bar Kamtza because he's going to go back and report us. Let's, the Jerusalem Talmud adds a line here that the rabbi said, let's switch the calf. No one will know. We'll give a different calf in the name of the Roman emperor and kill Bar Kamtza because he won't be able to go back and tell. Dilo leizel velema. He shouldn't go back and tell. Amalu Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas came back and said, if you kill him, yomru, people will say, matil mum bekotchim yareg, that if you blemish an animal, you get the death penalty. People will misunderstand what's going on here. So they're stuck there in a corner.
Are they really debating a misconception with the destruction of the Second Temple?
Well, they did not have the foresight to realize the Second Temple would be destroyed. That's exactly what Rav Yochanan's saying. That there was that the foresight is what's lacking here. So we have Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Wait, Kamtza didn't do anything. We never met Kamtza. He never came to the scene. And why is Kamtza part of this? What did he do wrong? How did Rav Yochanan begin? He said, over Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, Jerusalem was destroyed. What's it Kamtza's fault? He didn't do anything. He's sleeping at home. He doesn't even know from the whole story. So I would have said over Bar Kamtza and the host, over Bar Kamtza's cruelty. No, Rav Yochanan said over Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Food for thought. So now Bar Kamtza was slighted at the event. All the rabbis were silent. Bar Kamtza went to the Roman emperor and said, the Jews are rebelling. The Roman emperor said, prove it. Bar Kamtza said, send a sacrifice, I'll show you. They're en route with a perfect sacrifice. They're about to enter the temple and Bar Kamtza quickly blemishes the animal. And now the rabbis are arguing. What should we do? They don't know that this is a test. They just see a sacrifice being sent by the Roman emperor. In their mind, this is not an animal that's a test. It's just a sacrifice being offered. Yes?
I've never understood how this scenario was so difficult. Like, they keep debating, should we kill him? Should we do this? Should we switch the calf out. If they seem to have understood that he was trying to instigate a war between them. Why not just bring him up to trial in front of the public and make it known why he's going to be executed because of what he did? They understood that he was one that he was blemish or whatever, and to also to explain to the Romans, look, it doesn't, we don't care what you believe with your like idolatrous philosophy of what's a proper sacrifice to Zeus or whatever. Okay, this is our tradition, and we say that a slit on the eyebrow or the lip or whatever makes it pasul, and that's that.
In
the first place.
I kept it simple. If you want, we'll get a little bit deeper. technically, if a non-Jew wants to bring a sacrifice in the name of God, he can do that. He doesn't have to do it in the temple. Let's say a non-Jew wants to build a sacrifice in his backyard, build an altar, bring a sacrifice. He's not obligated, like us, to go to the temple to bring a sacrifice. And let's say he calls you and he says, Rabbi Cheskis, tell me, if I have an animal, it's not perfect, can I bring it as a sacrifice? So what would Rabbi Cheskis tell him? He'd say, look, the only thing that'll disqualify the animal is if it's missing a hand or a leg. If it's got all its limbs, it's just not so beautiful, you can bring it. And he asks you, Rabbi Cheskis, it has a slit in the lip or a slit in the eye. Is it kosher? Can I bring it as a sacrifice? The answer is yes. On your own private altar in honor of God, not in honor of Zeus, in honor of God, you may bring that sacrifice. So the Romans were working by the guidebook they had from the Jewish rabbi. In their territory, whenever they'd want to offer a sacrifice in honor of God, this was not a disqualifying blemish. In their territory, on their own altar in honor of God. So the issue was, this was that Bar Kamtza had taken advantage of a little clause in the law that says, yes, but if a non-Jew sends it up to the temple, he has to abide by our rules. And to think that we could execute a messenger that was sent by the Roman emperor when we were under their rule, and when our kings had an argument, they would go to the Roman emperor to arbitrate. And when there was a fight between the servant named Herod, who had amassed a force and became friendly with the Romans, Herod was able to use his political clout with the Romans to murder the rabbis and the Hasmonean dynasty and take the throne with the backing of the Romans. And the Jewish people had zero army to talk for. They had nothing. They hadn't had an organized army since the days of the First Temple. The whole period of the Second Temple, we were basically under foreign rule. Persia, Mede, we had a small period of Jewish history where we had a little bit of our own sovereignty, and quickly the Romans took over. I'm not talking about the Greeks. I'm not talking about... So the Hasmonaim had an army that led guerrilla warfare, and we had sovereignty for about 100 and something years, and probably a little less, because about 80 years. At any rate, coming back to our story, so they're in a quandary. There's an argument going on in the Temple Mount. What should we do with Bar Kamtza? And they don't realize that their fate is on the scale. Says Rav Yochanan, remember the Pasuk, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid. Praised is he who is always concerned. And this is where we'll pick up Bezat Shem tomorrow.